Devaishna Rinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridasa Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shikoshi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Raita Kadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamai Jumuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prastaya Bhutale. Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve. Gauravani Pacharne. Nivase Sisanivadi Paskachade Satarne. Mande ham shi guru shi yuta pada kamalam shi guru and vaishnavam cha shi rupam sagraja tam sagana ragana tam bitam sam sajivam sadvoitam sadrutam padijana sahita krishna chaitanya devam shi radha krishna padam sagana lalita shi pishakam bitam cha manchikalpa jubistaki pisnavi evita pritanam pavane vil vaishnavam namo namah. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. May 15th, 2015, in Tuwaku, New Jersey, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 10, Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka, Text 13. What time does the class end? Sarve te nimisharakshais.
Sarve te nimisharakshais.
Tam manu druta chetasaha.
Tam manu druta chetasaha.
Vikshanta sneha sambhara.
Vikshanta sneha sambhara.
Viche lus tatra tatraha.
Viche lus tatra tatraha.
Please chant.
Sarve te
nimishai rakshais.
Tam anu druta chetasa.
Tam anu druta chetasa.
Vikshanta sneha sambhada.
Vikshanta sneha sambhada.
Vichelus tatra tatraha.
Vichelus tatra tatraha.
Sarve te nimishai rakshais.
Sarve te nimishai rakshes.
Tam anu druta chetasa.
Tam anu druta chetasa.
Vikshanta sneha sambandha.
Vikshanta sneha sambhara.
Viselasa tatra tatraha.
Vichelus tatra tatraha.
Sarve te nimishai rakshes.
Sarve te nimishai rakshes. Tam manu druta chetasaha.
Vikshanta sneha sambhara.
Vichelus tatra tatraha. Sarve. All. Te. They. Animishai.
Without twinkling of the eyes.
Akshai.
By the eye.
Tamanu.
After him.
Druta chetasaha.
Melted heart.
Vikshantaha.
Looking upon him.
Sneha sambadaha.
Bound by pure affection.
Vicheluhu.
Began to move.
Tatra
tatra.
Here and there.
Ha.
Ha.
So they did.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. All their hearts were melting for him on the pot of attraction. They looked at him without blinking their eyes, and they moved hither and thither in perplexity. Purport. Krishna is naturally attractive for all living beings because he is the chief eternal amongst all eternals. He alone is the maintainer of the many eternals. This is stated in the Kathopanishad Veda, and thus one can obtain permanent peace and prosperity by revival of one's eternal relationship with him, now forgotten under the spell of Maya or the illusory energy of the Lord. Once this relation is slightly revived, The conditioned soul at once becomes free from the illusion of material energy and becomes mad after the association of the Lord. This association is made possible not only in personal contact with the Lord, but also by the association of his name, fame, form, and quality. And Srimad Bhagavatam trains the conditioned soul to this stage of perfection by submissive hearing from the pure devotee. Sarve ten nimishar akshas tam anu druta cheta saha vikshanta sneha sambara vichelus tatra tatraha. All their hearts were melting for him on the pot of attraction. They looked in him without blinking their eyes, and they moved hither and thither in perplexity. Jai Sri Shivani Jai Sri Tiro Makshwan Hanuman. Gopam Akhti Parada Sinha. This is the devotees. They're so attracted to the Lord, they can't look at anything else. And this attraction melts their hearts. Their hearts are melting. Jutta Chetasaha. So here Prabhupada is saying that when we just slightly revive our relationship with Krishna, we become mad after him and we become free from illusion. So all of our problems are due to this illusion. All of our problems. If we take the suffering of the body and the mind, so we have, you know, we get injured, we get sick, our body gets very dirty and stinky. And we have so many problems from the body. The body's whipping us with hunger and thirst, lust, sleepiness, so many things. And then the miseries of the mind. Why did I do this? Why did I say that? Why didn't I do this? Why didn't I say that? What will happen? What will happen because of all these things that I did or didn't do? Will I get this? Will I get that? Will I keep this? Will I keep that? So many anxieties. Does this person like me? What will happen with my body? What will happen with my mind? What will happen with my relationships? What will happen with my things, with my job, with my living? And on and on and on. And the mind is giving us suffering. And suffering from other living entities. This person said this to me. This person said that to me. There's some mosquito. There's some barking dog. There's some difficult immigration official, whatever it may be, you know, some other living entities. And then the weather, too hot, too cold, too dry, too humid, too rainy, not enough rain, ice and snow. And all of these sufferings, and then of course there's birth, death, old age and disease, being in the womb, and then getting old, and getting sick, we already mentioned. And then all the things we've invested into, we lose at death. People's house gets burned down or something like that. And they lose they've spent so much time. I had a friend when I was a child, and they'd saved for so many years to buy their own house. And they finally bought their own house. The mother was an artist, and she decorated, you know, the curtains and furniture, and she painted designs around all the windows, you know, everything was like, it was like walking into a big piece of artwork. And 2 weeks later, her husband had a heart attack and he was very sick. He had to quit his job and they had to sell the house. But death is everything, not just the house, right? Not just your favorite phone or something like that, you know, everything. Your body, all everything you've ever learned, right? All your relationships, everything. We've just been investing so much into this life, into this identity, and okay, play's over, and game's over, that identity's finished. So this is great suffering. All of these things are great suffering. Adiyatmik, adidaivik, adibodhmik, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi. These are all great suffering, but they're all due to illusion. You know, the way that we try to conquer this suffering, how do we try to conquer this suffering? So sometimes people try to conquer it through just regular karma. This is the general way, right? Or we could look actually at the three modes of nature too briefly. So within the realm of the materialistic person, they try to conquer it. In the mode of ignorance, people try to conquer these miseries through sinful activities. That's how they try to conquer it, through ignorance. Well, you know, I don't have enough money, I'll steal some money. Right? I'm not getting enough food, I'll pour chemicals into the earth and get more food. you know, whatever. Whatever means is available to them. I mean, someone in the mode of ignorance will do something nice if it's easy and works, but they're just as willing to do something not nice. They want to do whatever is fastest. Right? Whatever is fastest. So if they can make a lot of money easily at a job, they'll do that. But if they can make money faster by lying and cheating and stealing, then they'll do that. Right? They want to eat fast food. I was reading an article how this fast food destroys the beneficial bacteria in the digestive system very quickly, within a week of eating this food. One's whole internal digestive process is finished. But, you know, I'll just eat that. So there's people in the mode of ignorance. You know, how will we conquer these various problems? We'll conquer them in some immediate demoniac way. How will we conquer birth? With contraceptives, with abortions. We'll conquer the problems of birth with, you know, anesthetics and cesarean sections. You know, we'll conquer death by freezing the brain. We'll conquer disease with all these demoniac medicines where you get the list of the side effects is as big as the list of the things that it cures. That's the mode of ignorance. Then the mode of passion is we will conquer these miseries by being a good person in the world, by doing good karma. So we'll earn a lot of money through honest labor. And Bill Gates is a really good example of this, Rajagun. We'll earn a lot of money through good labor, and then we'll use our energy in charity work. You know, and some people in the mode of passion, like Bill Gates, he said, I can do more good for the world on a Sunday with my charity work than I could ever do in a church. So this is one level of the mode of passion. You know, I'm going to make the world bigger and better and bigger and better through my protest marches, through my political schemes, or I'm going to make it better through art and through culture and through music. Prabhupada talks about all this as being in the mode of passion. I'm going to build a grand civilization by my own effort. And I probably also will be a religious person, you know, at least superficially. I'll go to the church, to the temple, to the mosque, right? and be a pious person. This is the way I'm going to conquer the material miseries. And the person in the mode of goodness says, I'm going to conquer the material miseries by living in harmony with nature. I'm going to live in balance with the universe, and I'm going to conquer the material miseries by living in this balance and this harmony. I'm going to be a forgiving, merciful person. I'm going to be equipoised. I'm not going to be so much affected by the miseries. And this way, I will conquer the miseries and be happy. So these are the three ways within illusion. So this is within the bubble of illusion. But we notice that none of them conquers the miseries. The mode of ignorance person certainly doesn't conquer the miseries. In fact, the means they take to conquer the miseries are themselves more miserable than the miseries themselves. The person in the mode of passion isn't great risk, because even though they're doing good karma, they also may inadvertently do bad karma, like this King Nriga, who gave so much charity, so much good karma, but then he made one mistake. Also, the person in the mode of passion is very much in the Sahankara Vimudhatma Kartaham Iti Manyate, I am the doer, Ishwaraham Mahambogi. They're very much in this mentality. And at best, they get a wealthy or powerful body on earth. Maybe in the higher levels of the mode of passion, they get to go to heaven. But generally, those in the mode of passion, they become very rich and famous and powerful persons on this earth. But that doesn't really solve your problems. A poor person who is sick and a rich person who's sick, they're both suffering. I mean, maybe the rich person is suffering in a nice hospital, in a sterile environment, and the poor person is just suffering at home. But they're both suffering. It's not that by doing the mode of passion, you get free of these basic sufferings. And the person in the mode of goodness, of course, person in the mode of passion, they have some happiness. They get some sense, enjoyment, happiness, which even the person in the mode of ignorance does not. But in the mode of goodness, there's some happiness. There's some happiness because you're connecting with something that is close to the spiritual, this sense of equilibrium inside and forgiveness and mercy and all this inside. It gives you some sense of happiness. It gives you a kind of, if you ever meet people who are really in sattva-gun and they're kind of like, right? You've met these people? just peaceful and kind and tolerant and kind of in the present, right? So that's a kind of happiness, but it's still very me-centered, it's still very body-centered. And they still take another birth, maybe on the higher planets. But even on the higher planets, Abrahma Bhuvanaloka Punaravarti Arjuna Mamupecha Tukanteya Punarjanma Navijite. Or Prabhupada says they can take repeated birth on this planet as a poet or a philosopher. But even that, such a person, again, such a person, again, it's not that the poets and the philosophers don't have to die. Even in the heavenly planets, they have to die. There's one story in the Mahabharata about this one man who was very pious. And a chariot came from heaven. Okay, you can go to Indra's planet. And he said, well, before I go there, tell me something about it. This is intelligence, right? If someone just came and offered you a ticket to someplace. Now, here's a ticket to Japan. Well, what is it like in Japan? You don't just say, okay, I got a ticket. He said, what's it like in the heavenly planets? Oh, you have this useful body, so much pleasures. But then after you're there so many years, when you've used up all your credit, then your garland wilts. This is the first sign. You have this ever-fresh garland. Like this garland isn't ever-fresh. It's already wilting. So there the garlands start to wilt, and within a year you come down back to the earth. And he said, no, then I'm not going there. What is the point? So this is all within illusion. And this illusion is aham mameti, me and mine. This world is for me to enjoy. Although particularly we see this in the modes of passion, ignorance, ishwaraham aham bhogisiddham. I am the perfect, powerful person, and I am going to be the Lord of everything. It's there even in the mode of goodness. Now, the person in the mode of ignorance, I'm going to enjoy, be the master of the world by hook and crook, by trickery, by subversion. The person in the mode of passion, I'm going to be the master by good works and hard working hard. Person in the mode of goodness, I'm going to be the master of the world by my own equilibrium and detachment. But they all want to be the master of the world, which brings you back into birth and death and getting these illusory bodies, which is the whole problem. So then we have people who figure this out and say, all right, that's not how we're going to solve these problems. We're not going to solve these problems within the prison. We're going to solve these problems by getting out of the prison. So then we have people who try to do this by still doing karma, but with a different motive, karma palatyaga. They give up the fruit of their karma, and they're still good persons, externally indistinguishable from someone in the mode of passion or goodness, but their internal motivation is they're no longer doing these good works to enjoy the world, but they're doing them for liberation. Take care of the wife, take care of the husband, do the job, so that I can become purified. So that I can become liberated. This is karma yoga. Now, karma yoga, it's still, though, self-centered. So I can become liberated. Now, the karma yogis, they often go to the very high planets of the jnanis. Some of them enter into the Brahman. The perfect karma yogis may enter into the Brahma Jyoti because that's what they're looking for. They're looking for liberation. And karma yoga is very risky because one can fall back again into this, I'm a pious person. It's easy to slip back. Also in karma yoga, until you've attained to the Brahman, you're not experiencing spiritual happiness. And because you're renouncing the fruit of your work, you're not experiencing much material happiness. So it's very risky. Very, very risky. Most karma yogis, they end up again going into the, ahankaravimudha makarta hamiti maniti. I'm a good person. I am earning my liberation. Instead of I am earning my big house and I am earning my good karma, I am earning my liberation through my pious works. And we are told to be sure we do not have this mentality in bhakti. This is one of the offenses on chanting, to think the chanting of the holy name is some pious material activity and we are earning our way back to Godhead. This is the view of the karma yogis. Then some people also who see the futility of working in illusion are the Gyan Yogis. Now the Gyan Yogis, they really try to break through the heart of this illusion. And they do it through philosophy. Right? That we're not this body, that everything here is futile. that no matter whether you're in goodness, passion, or ignorance, you're still going to suffer. Right? They meditate, what is the body? Just skin and bones and blood and mucus and hair, even the most beautiful body. If you took the constituents of it and looked at them separately, even skin, somebody with beautiful skin or beautiful hair, you have some piece of skin and some pile of hair, it's not attractive, correct? Right? Our hair is attractive because we're in the body. It's the soul that's actually attractive. So the Gyan Yogis, they meditate on philosophy and they become detached from achieving anything in the world. They're not generally engaged even in pious activities. They're engaged in discussion and study and philosophy. And there are a number of religious groups. Most religious groups in the world are working in either Karma Kanda, Karma Yoga, or Gyan Yoga. Generally, that's what they're doing. Either be a pious person in the world by the grace of God and conquer and enjoy the world, or be a pious person simply to get liberation, or be a philosophical person. Some religions, they encourage people to just, you know, study the scriptures over and over again and be detached from sense gratification, even pious action in the world. The Gyan Yogis, they, if they're successful, they will go to the Brahmajyoti, or sometimes they will go to the Paramatma. But again, it's very difficult because we all have experience that we can have philosophical conviction that sense gratification is foolish and it doesn't matter. We'll do it anyway. Right? The doctors and nurses in the operating theater, how can you have any more philosophical realization than that? And they're cutting open the patient and they're flirting with each other while they're cutting open the patient. Yes? Right? They're the intestines are there, the heart, everything, all the nature of the body is right in front of them, and still they're, okay, give me the scalpel. Hey, can you go on a date with me tonight at 8 o'clock? So this gyan is not sufficient. Right? It's very difficult to become detached simply through gyan. We'll get to why in a moment. And then this gyan yoga, there's a lot of imitation of gyan yoga going on in the world today. This idea is the gyan yogi sees the futility of working in goodness, passion, and ignorance. And they try to get out not through pious works, not through philosophy and intellectual understanding. They try to get out mechanically. It's like somebody in prison who tries to get out by picking the lock. You know, the karma yogi, they try to get out through good behavior. The gyan yogi, they try to get out through just detachment. And the gyan yogi, they're trying to open the lock and walk out of the prison. So in gyan yoga, it's a fact that if you put your body in certain postures and you breathe in a certain way, you will trigger a different mentality. The body and the mind are connected. We talk a lot about how the mental state influences the body. Well, also the bodily state influences the mind. Yes? What you eat, etc. But how you sit, how you stand influences your mind. And how you breathe influences your mind. So they try. Also, they lead a pious work, nyam niyam. They don't engage in sinful activities. And they try through this mechanical means to enter into a trance. And frankly, anybody can be taught how to do this. And then in this trance, they meditate on the Lord. And through this meditation on the Lord, they hope to become liberated. And if they're successful, they will enter into, again, the Brahmajyoti, or they will go with the Paramatma. In this day and age, hardly anybody can perform this Gyan Yoga properly. You have to already be expert in Karma Yoga and Gyan Yoga to do this Gyan Yoga. To do Karma Yoga, you have to already be expert in karma. You can't do Karma Yoga unless you're expert in karma. And generally, unless somebody's already expert in karma, they don't have the requisite piety to understand gyan. So all these are very difficult in this age because very few people are really good at karma in this present age. I mean, we just have to say frankly, most people are not engaged in purely pious activities. Practically everything in this present age is contaminated by tamagun. It's very, very difficult to get no contamination from tamagun at all. You know, in the products that we buy, I know all of you are looking at the verse on your phone. So do we think about how much suffering goes into making these phones? I mean, what people are really experiencing to produce this technology for us? They're working in horrible conditions without proper health care. They're working often with toxic chemicals that make them very ill and give them miscarriages and deformed babies. And I mean, I was reading an article about how the women who work in these fingernail salons, that many of them have miscarriage after miscarriage after miscarriage. Their babies are deformed or their babies are mentally defective. The women get so many lung diseases and digestive diseases. They die at a young age from all these horrible diseases. So this is the working conditions, we have to frankly say, of the people who are producing so many of the things that we are using. Therefore, it's very, very difficult to have even a good karma life. Very difficult. What are you going to do? Even in our farms where we grow our own food, we don't grow all of our own food. We don't grow our own fibers for cloth. We don't grow our own medicine. You know, we're still dependent on the society in so many ways. So who's going to do this karma yoga, gyan yoga, gyan yoga? Who's going to have the mental ability? So here is given a whole different solution. A completely different solution. And this, my dear friends, is the only solution that really gets at the root. Because we find that those who go to the Brahman or the Paramatma even, Avasuddha Buddhiya, their intelligence is still not purified. And they have every risk of coming back into illusion. So the karmakandis, whether goodness, passion, ignorance, are all within the realm of illusion. The karma yogis, jnana yogis, jnana yogis, they seek to rise above illusion. But they're seeking to rise above illusion, still thinking of themselves as the doer. And they're still thinking of themselves. I want to rise above illusion so I will be liberated. Because that's how I will be the most happy. But that's mentality, that I am the doer and I am looking for me as the center, is the whole root of the whole problem. Therefore, again, they fall down. They don't find the real happiness. So the real solution to everything is to get at the root. You know, like there are dandelion weeds, and the dandelion weeds are very tenacious. You can cut them, pull them, but the root is very deep, or crabgrass, where the root goes, you know, horizontally under the ground. So we want to get to the root, and the root is that I am a servant of Krishna, that he is wonderful, that he is at the center, because that is the truth. Are any of us at the center? Can anyone say, I am the most important person in my family? Everything in my family revolves around me. Can we say, my family is the most important family in Tuwako, New Jersey? Everything in Tuwako, New Jersey revolves around my family. Can we say, everything in New Jersey revolves around Tuwako? Everything in America revolves around New Jersey. Everything in the world revolves around America. Well, that we like to think that way. If you go to the UK, they will not agree. Everything in the solar system revolves around the Earth. In the galaxy around the solar system. In the universe around the galaxy. Is this the most important universe? This is childish. I am the most important person. Whether we live or die is a little blip in the world. It's a little blip in the world. What's important to us is hardly even noticed by the people we live with. Isn't it a fact? Even the people who are near and dear to us and who live with us and work with us, they hardly notice what we do during the day and what we are thinking and what is important to us. Hardly, sometimes. So only bhakti gets to this reality that it is Krishna who is at the center, not me. Life is not about either my enjoyment in illusion nor about my salvation. Life is about Krishna. And ironically, I get full enjoyment and full salvation. And also ironically, I realize my significance when I put Krishna at the center. This is the irony. The karmakandis, whether in tamagun, rajagun, sattvagun, the karma yogis, the jnana yogis, the dhyana yogis, they are trying for something without understanding how to actually get it. So how do we get this in bhakti yoga? Well, how interesting. We get this simply by becoming attracted to Krishna. Bhakti yoga is not so much a set of rituals. Rituals is very much in the realm of karmakanda and karma yoga. Nor is it a set of philosophies. Krishna consciousness doesn't mean becoming convinced of the philosophy intellectually and becoming detached intellectually. That's Dhyan yoga. Nor is Krishna consciousness a question of, okay, I'm going to enter into an altered state by sitting in a certain way and chanting the mantra properly. That's Dhyan yoga. Now, of course, we use karma, Dhyan, and Dhyan in bhakti. It's not that we don't use them in bhakti. We do good works and we study philosophy and we meditate. And we have our rituals. But it is not those things that are solving our problem. What is solving our problem is becoming attracted to Krishna. And that is bhakti. The reason we have, you know, all of our rules of deity worship, the reason we are chanting Hare Krishna, the reason we are studying the Bhagavatam, is so we can become attracted to Krishna. That is the point. That is uttam bhakti. Even if we are neophytes, if we are doing that, we are performing uttam bhakti. We are performing pure bhakti. We may not be pure, but we are still doing pure bhakti. A person may be diseased, and they may still be getting a pure form of the medicine. So that is what pure bhakti is. Pure bhakti is, I am becoming attracted to Krishna, and it's by my attraction to Krishna, my reinstatement, as Prabhupada says here, the revival of our original relationship. We have an original relationship with Krishna. So in the beginning of bhakti, this is in a very general way. Jivaraswara Paya Krishna Aranichudasa. Mamai Vamaso Jivaloke Jivabuddhisanatana. I'm a part of Krishna, I'm Krishna's servant. But we generally in the beginning are still holding on to some upadis. You know, I'm from India, I'm from America, I'm from Peru, I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm this person's wife, husband, sister, daughter, whatever. I am, you know, a member of ISKCON living in Tuwaka. We're still holding on to that kind of identity. But we should change to, I am a servant of Krishna. And as we're meditating, I am a servant of Krishna, and we're trying to become attracted to Krishna, then what happens? What happens here, Prabhupada says, one's eternal relation can become slightly revived. So this is what is supposed to happen, and it's not supposed to take a long time. If it's taking a very long time, then either we're not really doing bhakti, we're doing karma yoga, gyan yoga, or dhyan yoga, or some mixture, or we're very offensive. Or both. Maybe we're very offensive and we're mixing our bhakti, if it's taking a very long time. But it should be that very quickly, gradually, but quickly, our original relationship with Krishna becomes revived. So it's not just a general thing that, oh, I'm Krishna's servant, and, you know, but it becomes a very specific thing. And this cannot happen artificially or intellectually. One cannot just say, well, I think I'd like to be a cowherd boy, or I think I'd like to be a blade of grass. Because it is our original relationship, revival, Prabhupada says, of our eternal relation. Because it is a waking up of what is already there, it's not something that we can speculate about in an illusory consciousness. That's not relevant. That's like a three-year-old saying, I want to be a fireman. Or I want to marry that girl in my nursery school class. It's not meaningful. But as we become attracted to Krishna, our eternal relation should slightly awaken. Slightly awaken. And one gets a feeling inside. I am Krishna's beloved. I am Krishna's parent. I am Krishna's friend. I am Krishna's servant. And as soon as that slightly awakens, Prabhupada says, then we become free of illusion. Because what is the illusion? And that I am the master. So when we start understanding, oh, I am Krishna's this, I am Krishna's this. Then we start working in that consciousness. So in the beginning, we just have to work, I am the servant of Krishna, I am the servant of Guru. That should be our designation. And that becomes very specific. And then, as Prabhupada says, then one becomes mad after the association of the Lord. Then one is no longer doing the externals of bhakti with the hope of liberation, you know, or with some intellectual conviction bolstered by some drops of periodic experiences. But one starts becoming more and more, gradually, one starts becoming more and more, I have to have Krishna. 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 And this intensifies and intensifies and intensifies. And then the heart starts to melt. The heart starts to melt. In these other processes, one risks that the heart becomes hard. Oh, these bodies are nothing but stool and urine and hair. What becomes hard? Or I'm just doing my duty without attachment to the result. You know, one can become hard. But in bhakti, one's heart melts. So when this happens, then one, it's quite interesting, then one sees that I have nothing to do with this world. It's not, my dear friends, that first we realize that I have nothing to do with this world, and then I become attracted to Krishna. It's that one becomes attracted to Krishna, and in that attraction to Krishna, one realizes I have nothing to do with this world. It's something like what happens to us materially. Prabhupada often uses this analogy at puberty. So all of a sudden, we become attracted to the opposite sex. And we lose our interest in toys. Because we're interested in something else, we lose our interest in the fantasy. Yes? Everybody remembers going through this? You know, you take out your toys and you try to play with them and there's no rasa in them, right? I mean, I remember taking out my toys. It was like 12, 13. And trying to play with them. And there was no taste. They had become like cardboard. And the rasa was gone. Why? Because I had sat down philosophically and said, these toys are really just pieces of plastic. No. But because I'd become attracted to something else, I'd become attracted to the world of the adult. So when we become attracted to the world of Krishna, everything in the world automatically, naturally, becomes seen for what it is, which is tasteless. There's no rasa here. There's a reflection of rasa, there's a shadow of rasa, but there's not actually rasa. It's like trying to eat a photograph of ice cream. It looks like ice cream, and I'm sure they can put something in it where you can scratch the paper and it smells like ice cream. You could make the paper cold, but there's no taste. So this is how we become actually on the enlightened platform. And then one comes to the point where one just doesn't even want to stop looking at Krishna. One's heart is melting and one is simply, how can I find Krishna? How can I find Krishna? How can I find Krishna? So this is how we should be aiming in our japa, in our kirtan, in our deity worship, in our book distribution, in taking care of our family, in going to our job, in going to school. It should all be, how can I please Krishna? How can I please Krishna? How can I find Krishna? How can I find Krishna? How can I find Krishna? And we should notice these symptoms of this melting heart and this symptom of becoming attracted more and more to Krishna. So we have a couple minutes if there are any questions or comments or additions, subtractions, chastisements. I get them sometimes. I figure I might as well ask for it. No? Yes?
Questions are many, but you know, we have to go by step. What you said, most of the answers are given by you only.
Most of the what?
Whatever you said, a couple of questions have already been answered.
Oh, I already answered. Whatever questions you had, I answered. Yeah. Okay.
But the question doesn't end now. Questions keep coming. Then you have to find out a way how to get your answer yourself.
Hmm. You know, ultimately, we get our answers from our internal purity. Ultimately. Because until we are clear, we can't see things clearly enough. Even if the answer is in front of us, we don't understand it. I'm sure materially we all have this experience. You try to explain an answer to somebody and they don't. It doesn't matter. You can try 100 ways of explaining it. So in the mode of ignorance, we are so covered. It's like we have a thick blanket over our head. You know, and we can't see. So even if the answer is in front of us, we don't see it. In the mode of passion, it's like a thin blanket, like those Muslim ladies that wear the black, but they can see through it. Yes? I mean, they look like they're wearing a big garbage bag over their head. But they can still see. But not very well, I would assume. I'm sure it's not very good seeing. So that's the mode of passion. And the mode of goodness, it's like you have a window. You're not outside, but you have a window. It's clear. Krishna says in the mode of goodness, you can see what is to be done, what is not to be done, what is binding, what is liberating. So the more that we get free from this passion, ignorance, the more clearly we can understand things. Therefore, Krishna gives the process of knowledge in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verses 8 through 12, as all goodness things. If you want to know, you have to be in goodness. And people in passionate ignorance can know something, but what they know is very distorted. Yes? So this is how we really get our answers. Even our ability to be intellectually convinced is dependent on how uncovered we are. Someone who's very covered, they'll perceive things wrongly. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. To Vaishnavas, Vaishnavas Ki Jai.